Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be adding today something that goes right along with mind power. It's heart. That's right. And my guest today, Rhonna Prince, is a woman that has put together an absolutely wonderful film called The Sacred Journey of the Heart. It's all about the science and spirit of our connection, not just to each other, but to every living thing in life. But it's more than that. It is a lot more than that. And we're going to find out what it entails. I want to welcome to the show Rhonna Prince. Rhonna, this is quite a wonderful film. It actually ended up being a lot more in the way of substance than I anticipated it was going to be.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's great to be here, and it's good to hear that. I know sometimes when we put the word heart in something, people think it's about emotions and fluff, but the film is, as you've discovered, really about facts and science and the combination of feelings and thought and why it's so important to work from both places in an integrated manner.
You had sent along with the film a little bookmark, and on that bookmark there is this quote: feeling builds connection, heart creates wholeness, love manifests abundance. Rhonna, this is a month especially where I feel that we're entering in, we've already entered into the holiday season. I mean, you see it everywhere. And this month especially, being the month of November, we have the celebration of Thanksgiving, the appreciation of the abundance that we have around us. And there's just a shift that occurs. And when I saw your film about a month ago, I thought, this is really a great time to talk about this because there is so much disruption that goes on in the world. We're bombarded with it on a daily basis, and so many feel so heavy with this. I was in a meeting yesterday, and someone said, oh, we have such dark days around us. And I was listening to this, and when I thought about our interview today, I thought, the mind, the heart, the spirit connection, we can make shifts. But your story about this film really intrigued me because at the beginning of the film, you talk about how, I don't remember how many years ago, you had already put something together and it just wasn't working. It just wasn't happening. Something was missing. Tell us your story about how this film evolved.
Well, I had left the world of large corporate banking in 2003 by just the universe kicking, closing doors and saying, you know, you really need to shift and do something else. I thought, well, I might as well do what really is calling to my heart, which is to help people transform. And I'm very intuitive and I'm able to really help people hone in on things that they might not be seeing or admitting to themselves. And so I started counseling and coaching in 2003, and I was working a lot with the law of attraction and the mind with my clients. If we could just think the right things and get to those core negative beliefs in our mind, we could create lasting change in our lives. And we'd make some progress, and we'd only get so far, and then there'd be something happen, and it'd be kind of like a reset. Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking something is missing, you know, and I loved the films, What the Bleep and The Secret that came out. Those really helped open the doorway for a lot of people. And I thought, well, I believe the missing ingredient is our heart and the integration of heart and feeling. So I set out to make a film to talk about that, not so much a full-length award-winning feature documentary that it turned out to be, but more of just a promotional piece for my clients to say, let's explore this. And I was taking people to sacred sites around the world to say, see how they would change. And that's the key word, how they changed out there. And and I started to see the edits come back from the editor. And I looked terrified and scared to death in front of the camera. And I thought, hold the camera. Everything has to stop here. I was on camera talking about love and compassion and connection. The only thing moving was my lips, and the rest of me was in this like frozen deer in the headlights look. So, mm-hmm. You know, with that evidence right in front of me, I had to shift gears and go into my own heart journey about what was happening in here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had done a good portion of the movie, and like you said, filming yourself in 2009, and it was about 2 years that it took you. And someone might say, oh my goodness, Rana, you're going to miss your market. Rana, why are you doing this? Rana, are you insane? Do you know what this is costing you? Let's just get it out. Am I wrong? Didn't people say that to you?
I did. I had a lot of people say, you know, just get on with it. And it was every single person, though, that really was intimately connected with the project. We were all facing our own unhealed issues, whatever those were. And in the course of making the film, for myself, it was about an 11-month process. But our editor was also, director, was diagnosed with cancer about the same mm-hmm. time I saw myself on camera. And I even had people say, well, fire him and go get somebody else to finish this film. And I said, absolutely not. I will not fire my editor. My director will support him through whatever he's going through, because I knew we all had to go on that inner journey. And, you know, there was just, you know, kind of a red light. There was no going forward. Even if I had tried, and I did, I tried to push through it, it didn't work. And so it was a wonderful opportunity to just, you know, go where the next teacher showed up, because when we're ready, they do appear. And for me, that was Colin Tipping, the originator of radical forgiveness, and that's what made the tremendous difference in my own life.
Now, the movie is broken into segments, and let me see, I think, if I remember correctly, there are like seven segments the movie. So someone, which I found was very good, because if someone watched it through all the way, then they might say, this Chapter 4 really resonates with me. I want to go back. So they can do this. They can go back to whatever chapter they want to go to. So I thought that was very good. But I also thought, because I just want to cover a few of these chapters, Chapter 1 has to deal with the collapse of paradigms. And boy, are we going through that big time right now.
Yeah, we sure are.
We are going through it on so many levels. And instead of being paralyzed with fear, which is what I've gone through episodes like that in my life. I'm not trying to play holier than thou, but you have to reach a point where you say, wait a minute, what is the gift in this? What is the positive aspect of this situational condition? Look at what you went through. You took over 2 years to really make sure that this movie that you were producing was going to have the standard of quality and excellence that you really wanted, and it's definitely proven to be the wise choice. And you have a wonderful aspect in Chapter 1 about skydiving and getting past mm-hmm. your fears so that you could be on camera, and that story is amazing. But I want to go and touch on Nelson Mandela's story. And this is in your Chapter 2. And you have so many different aspects, so many different points. You mentioned Colin Tipping, mm-hmm. Saying, see the greater picture, forgiveness. And you go into how to tell the story, feel the feelings. Let's go into that Chapter 2. Nelson Mandela has been an inspiration for millions of people around the world. What this man has gone through is just phenomenal, and his attitude is just awesome. And he's in his 90s today. Tell me why you chose Nelson Mandela.
Well, the narrator of our film, Mary Morrissey, who many people know, she's one of the leaders of the Global Thought Movement, and she was actually in the delegation that was sent to South Africa to award Nelson Mandela the Gandhi King Peace Prize. And so she happened to be the narrator, and instead of just narrating, I asked Mary, would you go on camera and share some of your wisdom? So she was able to tell that story of her first-person experience awarding this to Mandela, and she asked him her burning question, which is, how did you become a man who spent 27 years imprisoned by his own country to become the man to lead Truth and Reconciliation hearings? And he explained to Mary, and she recounts the story on camera, but the real turning point was, he told Mary, I went into prison a very angry, bitter man. And in order to do what I did 27 years later, and it was a long journey, I had to become a man of heart. And that's what made it possible for him, the transformation he went through, instead of looking at what was all wrong with the situation and his goals were over, he started to ask himself, what if? What if the very reason for me being here is to help end apartheid? And then he started taking action. So that sets the stage for that chapter, which is the how we heal. And I go into my own personal story of healing from childhood abuse in that chapter. And it's only a small part of the film. It's not a whole story about healing from childhood trauma. There's many, many things presented in the film. But that really sets the stage and gets people to start opening to a possibility that whatever it is that they're experiencing in their lives, there may be a hidden gift in it if they just look at the possibilities rather than only the problem.
I agree. I just agree. Now, Todd Turley is a gentleman that died in 2005, and he's still around,
right?
But that transformed his life, as so many times these death experiences do with individuals. Tell us about what he shares, you know, just a segment of it, about the heart, the organ itself.
That's the third chapter of the film. Starts with Todd Turley's personal experience of dying from a heart attack, and we call that, you know, the physical energetic heart. We're really going into the importance of the heart on many levels, not just as a circulation pump. But he describes how that changed his perspective so much that he realized how interconnected everything was. And it's one of my favorite moments in the film where his teenage daughter, who's, you know, from the mouths of babes, we say, you know, goes and talks about the gratitude of how much more she appreciates life and her dad now and all the people that had to be exactly where they were for her father to live. And it's one of the most heart-opening parts of the film to see this teenage girl say the things that, you know, of principles that we could all do better in living by.
One of your chapters deals with Mayan medicine. And I really enjoyed this because I think there is, in every place on this planet, every culture has a richness to offer. And sadly, in the past, so many times we disempowered a cultural understanding. And I'm not talking about whether you've got rings in your nose or bells on your toes or feathers in your hair. I don't care about that. What I care about is the essence of truth that permeates every single culture on this planet when you're willing to dig past the costuming. And you bring that out. Let's talk about that. That's a chapter 5 in your movie.
Well, we had the wonderful opportunity to bring some of the wisdom, tribal indigenous wisdom teachers from all over the world, literally, and they were sharing what their belief has been for thousands of years. Greg Braden mentions, you know, their beliefs existed long before science did, and they have known all along that we are interconnected, and the heart and the spirit is that connecting point. So we have David Swallow, the headman of Lakotas, talks about that, as well as Uncle, we call him, from the Eskimo tribes in Greenland. And the Hun Botsman is on camera for a few minutes talking about how interconnected everything is. And our intent of including their message and their medicine, if you will, in the film was to show that this is nothing new. Just because we in the Western mind now can prove it, and the facts are proven are in the film of how powerful our heart really is to connect us. The indigenous elders say, hey, we've known this, our traditions have known it all along, and now it's time to get to come together, as Uncle says, to melt the ice in the heart of humanity and to heal each other through that first statement that you came on that was in the little bookmark, that love builds connection, and feelings are the creation, the point that really brings us together.
So true. Let's talk about the heart-brain connection, because the heart forever has been associated with feeling. In many different cultures in the world, especially to my knowledge level in the Native American culture, the heart of the animal, and in the African culture, the heart of the animal was powerful. In fact, I know in Africa, for example, if it was part of initiation, I don't remember if it was the Maasai or some other tribes, when they killed a lion, the hunter always would eat the heart of the lion, because that lion was recognized as being a superior predator but more than that, the strength, the courage, the power that it represented to that person was a part of their initiation. Now, fortunately, we don't need to go out and kill lions to do this anymore, right. Thank heaven. Uh-huh. But there was that time when they did that. And in indigenous cultures, this is something they often would say. You will absorb, especially with animal totems, etc., you absorb their essence. And often it was through the heart. And this is something where science now, woohoo, the science is saying, yes, there is a communication between the heart and the brain.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody with 5 cents worth of observation common sense would have figured that out. The whole body is integrated. You don't just treat a finger and not be aware of the rest of the body. This is something that was quite interesting. Give us some of the information on that.
Well, I was surprised to discover when I started delving into the science aspect of the film to bring it out of that, you know, soft and feely place that I originally wanted to, you know, emphasize. When I started interviewing the scientists, mostly from the Institute of Heart Math, I learned that, of course, we know the heart's a circulatory organ, and it also excretes its own hormones, so it's part of the endocrine system. That was news to me. But the most exciting thing that I found out was that heart has its own is part of the neurocardiology. It has its own synapses, and it communicates through the information through the two vagus nerves that go from the heart directly to the brain. But the really interesting fact is that, as Dr. Roland McCready said on the film, 80 to 90% of the signals that go between the heart and the brain originate in the heart and go to the brain. And he says it's not even a close call. People don't realize that. And having screened the film in movie theaters for 4 weeks out here in my hometown, every time that piece of information came on screen, people lost the next couple minutes of the movie because they had to turn and talk to each other in surprise. He says it's 80 to 90% of what the heart signal is sending through those nerves go up from from body to brain, and only about 10% from brain down to body. So that's very astonishing fact for most people, because we've been living under about 500 years of rationalism with the father of rationalism, René Descartes, I think, therefore I am. And my contention is I feel, and then I think, and therefore I am. And the scientists are really finding that to be true.
Mm-hmm. Well, so much thought is there. Thought is can happen instantaneously. It is the feeling that goes with the thought. A thought in and of itself is just a thought. It can't have any power unless the feeling goes along with the thought. And that is why in medicine, a wise doctor, Dr. Bernie Siegel, and so many others that really look at the person, at their patient, as a whole individual, will want to sit and talk to their patient. They want to find out what's going on in their lives. And it saddens me when, as I heard just this past week, a woman saying, I have 15 minutes with my doctor. That's all I've got. Another one said, oh, you're luckier than me. I only get 10. And I heard this and I thought, how can a physician, anyone, really understand or really get to the core cause and need of a patient? You can't do it in 10 minutes. I mean, right. Good grief, a cup of coffee? You can't drink a cup of coffee in 10 minutes unless it's stone cold. You're just not going to do it. It's just so impractical. We have become so, and I'll use the word, the heart needs to be de-thawed. I'll make an adjustment on what you talked about. You know, the icy heart has to be melted. We need to be able to really look at things in a way. And I think a lot of medical people want to do this, but they're afraid to deal with the attitudes of whoever the big kahunas are, whatever they might be. No, you only have 10 minutes. That's all you've got with this person. It's assembly line, boom, boom, boom. Well, a lot of people are rebelling against that. And this is something where I think your film is quite powerful, because you cannot engage with anyone. I don't care where you are in your life. I don't care what your profession is. Unless you do come from that positioning of wanting to take time and spending time where there is an opportunity to connect. And that does come from the heart. It might be in the brain a little bit, but it's that feeling. We've all had it when we've met someone and go, gee, you know, I'd like to talk to this person. I don't know why, but there's something going on here. I'd like to know more about them. You bring that out in the movie, and I think your story is especially powerful because you connected with your own heart. And I think in the Western world, we're indoctrinated in so many ways. You've got to think. And there is that point where you just have to turn off the noise and find out about yourself. And that was one of the most powerful aspects about your own story, because you had to connect with your own heart.
Well, it was a real turning point when I saw myself, you know, thinking I was doing pretty well. I was hoping nobody really noticed that I was disconnected. But as we know, you teach that which you most need to learn, and I was able to take the time out from this project and continue on with my daily activities, but find a way to come back to my heart. And it had to do with what Colin Tipping talks about. You can't heal what you don't feel. And I think we all, most of us, learned early on in life, I was rewarded for my ideas and what I could repeat back to the school teachers, and I was punished for my feelings. And that's especially rampant in our society today. As a mother of three boys, I know that boys do not sit well in classes, and they like to be diagnosed as ADHD if they get boisterous and rambunctious and excited.
Right.
So I learned that early on. Our kids are, most of them, still learning that. But when I went back to some of those early traumatic life experiences, and instead of just saying it's in the past, you know, I'm not going to feel it because that anger is a low vibration, which I had learned in my spiritual practice, I was just kind of getting by, and I went into some of those feelings, and as one of the lines in the film, I unpacked it. Yanias Nin, is it so much more painful to stay tightly wrapped up in that bud of hurt and pain than it is to take some time and unpack it and open up to a complete new way of being? And if the listeners want to see what does it look like, what's the value of doing the heart work, all you have to do is look at the first 2 minutes of my film. You can stream it live on my website, and you'll see the before and after. We stack them side by side, so you can see how I looked before I took this dive, this plunge into the heart, and how it is for me today, where I'm really much more present and flowing and connected with people instead of cut off and removed and isolated.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important. I think it's important that we be able to honor ourselves. And that is the gift you gave to you. You gave it to yourself because you needed to do that. And your film, there is so much in it. There's just so much wonderful information. And you have a few exercises during the film. One has to do with breathing and appreciation and gratitude, which I think is something that so often we forget. So often we forget. And it's being mindful. Being mindful that we are experiencing a gift right now, even in our sharing, even in our all of using all of our senses. It's here, it's now, it's present with us. And then you have a chapter 6 where you describe the action steps. Now, I thought this was very significant because you have all of these wonderful stories bringing in various understandings from different cultures. But these action steps, this really empowers a person. And they can do this in the privacy of their own home, or they could share it with friends. I think this is a great movie. If you wanted to have a special party during this month, invite your neighbors over, your friends over, say, I've just got this wonderful movie, Sacred Journey of the Heart. Why don't we have a potluck or bake up your favorite cookies or something like this and say, come on, let's just get together. It doesn't have to be a huge group, maybe just 4 or 5. And what a wonderful way to share concepts that you have here. And the movie is beautiful. It really is very, very nice. But let's talk about the action steps. Why did you put together this formulation?
Well, in the last chapter of the film, we wanted to leave the viewers with what they can actually do. Unlike many of the movies on spirituality and consciousness, people were left with a lot of information and excited about it, but have really no idea where to turn. So the whole seventh chapter of the film is called The Tools and Teachings of the Heart. So we present, you know, heart-centered meditation with Sarah McLean, a wonderful meditation teacher. Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about how to really change your personal reality step by step. It's very powerful part of the film, and I share an exercise I do with my clients. It's called a 360-degree review to how to work from seven concentric layers from our own heart out to reflect back into our lives the places where we're most called to take action. So the whole seven chapters about that, but throughout the film is the theme, the three simple steps of moving into the heart-based journey, which is dive in, tune in, and lighten up. So that theme goes through all 88 minutes of the documentary, so that there's kind of getting anchored in throughout, that just to take the dive into the heart, to feel and explore what's there, and then when you find what it is, and many people don't even know, they're so walled off from their feelings, and we do some heart exercises and coaching, they say, there's nothing, I don't feel anything. And I say, well, that in and of itself is very important information. So we tune into that, and then at the end of every process, I always say to people, lighten up, because it is some difficult work for a little while, but we've got to remember, in the moment, there's usually always something to celebrate and to have fun with and to appreciate and remind ourselves that for the most part, in this moment, life is usually pretty good, and so it's just working into it at our own pace in our own way, and we hope we share lots of ways in the film that people can really take home and start practicing.
Rana Prince, I think the movie is wonderful. I think it is a movie that could be shown to teenagers, to anybody of any age. I think to know that we can empower ourselves in a very special way and maybe be supportive of someone else that doesn't feel like they have any power in their lives. I think it is just a wonderful film. It's Sacred Journey of the Heart, the Science and Spirit of Our Connection. SacredJourneyOfTheHeart.com is the website. I hope that you will take the time to explore this, and as a gift for someone this holiday season, instead of buying something that's going to be a throwaway or just a flash in that person's life, why not give them something that they can watch again and again and again, enriching their lives and who knows how many other people's lives. Rana Prince, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been an absolute delight.
Thank you, Donna. I've enjoyed it so much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. SacredJourneyOfTheHeart.com. Won't you check it out? I think you'll be glad you did. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Quickly, I want to mention my guest, Rana Prince, the film that we were chatting about. She said there's a special on her website up through Thanksgiving, and it's called Ship on Us, and you need to look for that so that if you decide you wanted to buy the film, no shipping charges. Yes, Ship on Us, and I think it was .com. Anyway, go and check it out. And if nothing else, call their office and find out, because if you'd like to get it, that's something you need to know about it. I just learned about it when we came, when we went off the air. Okay, telephone lines are now open. That's right. I'm happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to follow up with a quote by Eckhart Tolle. And he said, acknowledging the good that you already have in your life is the foundation for all abundance. Let me repeat that one more time. Acknowledging the good that you have right now, those are my words. He said, you already have in your life is the foundation for all abundance. I think that is so true. Now, I know we've got a caller on the line. I'm going to be going to that caller. And you can call and chat with me today, too, 888-627-6008. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, this is Michelle. I'm calling from California. Can you hear me?
Yes, Michelle, I can. You're burping just a little bit, but are you on a cell?
Yes.
Okay, and we have a little tiny bit of a time delay. It's just natural when you're dealing with a cell and phone lines and all that kind of stuff. Where are you in California, Southern or Northern California?
I think you're asking me where in California. I'm in the middle there.
Don't you just love it when someone asks you a question and you say, no, it's not either one, it's in the middle, just like you've done. I just love that. What's the middle of California?
Oh, near like... I'd really rather not say, but kind of near, you know, Big Bearish.
Oh, so you're up in the mountains. Oh, that's a beautiful area. Yeah, Lake Tahoe, that kind of area. I don't know why. I equate that with Southern California. Of course, I'm a California girl, and I just merely divide the state in Southern, that's the bottom part, and the Northern, that's the upper part. And everything else goes, you know, divided between the two. But that is gorgeous. That is just gorgeous area up there. All right, my dear, let me give you information. First thing that I am looking at is that you need to be patient. You are frustrated because certain projections or plans have not been falling into positioning the way you feel that they should be. And I think in a way you're a bit of a perfectionist, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there are times when you need to know that the perfectionist part of you sometimes has to be put on a stool, turned and facing a wall, and you need to count to 1,000. Because if you don't, you're going to find yourself getting so stressed out, and it's not worth it. But I'd like you to do something that has often been described as mind mapping, because there are some particular things that you're discovering you have not put into context as far as objectives, the actions to meet those objectives, and looking at how you need to bring what could be a broad expanse down to a very narrow niche so that you can focus on that niche that you need to be in. And this is very significant. It's like someone I know who I was talking with yesterday. I was in a business meeting yesterday, and this individual is involved with a particular food line of products. And after a number of years, because this food line of products could be, gee whiz, it's all over the place. I mean, there's just, you could just go crazy trying to try to please everybody. But they actually narrowed their niche down. They had done enough research through the years that they finally figured out, number one, not to spread themselves so thinly. Number two, to find the niche, and then what in that niche area do they want to reach out to? And number three, how are they going to be able to utilize that niche with maybe social networking or something else to enable them to reach their objective? And I think that's what you need to do. You need to be able to really see what is most important, and it might necessitate your brainstorming with someone and saying, okay, if you were in XYZ position, what would you recommend that I do? And I think if you can do that, one, it's going to save you money, Two, it's going to enable you to gain a way of looking at the bigger picture and then pulling things down into an effective package. And three, you're going to realize you don't have to go through stuff alone. And you don't have to be fearful of someone ripping you off. You don't need to go there. But it's clarity of thinking. Clarity of thinking. And that is what you're developing. Because in the coming years, I'd say between 5 and 7 years from now, you are going to be very much involved in a business environment of your own that is going to require that. And you're going to have some people you're working with. And many times the thought's going to cross your mind, oh, I could do that better than them. You might. But if you work on what your strengths are and then find those people that will be the best in the strengths that you don't have, you're going to have a team that's really going to work well with you. And that is vitally important because you cannot do it all. So you're in this learning curve right now, Michelle. It's a very big learning curve. And I'd like you to embrace it. I don't want you to be frustrated with it. I want you to be understanding that this is what you're dealing with right now. You're in, let's say, a PhD course, and it's a crash course. And boy, you're not having fun with this. I want to say, lighten up, just like my guest said earlier. Lighten up and start reaching out and brainstorm with people. I don't care whether they're old, they're young, whatever. Brainstorm. Say, if you were in XYZ, what would you do? What options would you look at? What strategies can be implemented? See what they come up with. You've got nothing to lose. And it's okay to feel vulnerable. You need to know that. It's all right. It's healthy, in fact. It's healthy because you recognize that this is what you need to do. What's on your mind, dear? What would you like to ask me?
Well, that was insightful. The funny thing is that my biggest question right now is I'm feeling these weird sensations in my heart. So I'm doing all of these tests and stuff at the doctors. But I'm hoping perhaps maybe you can give me some insight into what it might be. And I know I shouldn't worry because I kept hearing you say that. But my concern is pursuing this going to help me? Because I don't understand what's happening to my body.
All right. What is happening to your body is that there's a couple of things. Number one, you came in with a genetic package of memory. And this goes back a number of generations. And I am seeing a man of a cultural, I don't know if he's Ethiopian or what his cultural ethnicity is. But I am looking at this man. And he goes back, four or five generations. You have inherited part of his genetic package, which isn't a surprise. And you've also inherited a genetic package from a female. And I want to say it's like your grandmother. Now, I think that you have people in your family that have gone through this in the past. And believe it or not, they lived a long life. So worrying isn't going to be solving anything. Getting the information is the key. What you want to do is be informed. And then you want to be proactive about what you need to do. And I think that I would strongly encourage you to do something like Tai Chi or yoga or Qigong, something in this way where you're doing what I'd call a workout with a meditative stance to it. And you want to be able to work with your body because there is going to be some surgery that's going to be coming up and that it'll be very successful. I want you to know that. However, you want to do is take action and be mindful of what you're doing. And again, that just dovetails with what I gave in the beginning regarding patience. This isn't something, you need to understand what it is. You need to understand that it's not good, it's not bad. It is a part of a memory, cellular memory package that has been passed along to you. So it's how do you work with that cellular memory so that you assist the body to gain the strength that it needs to work with creating a harmonic. And I would say music is a wonderful tool. I would say aspects of what is Western medicine to find out what the quote-unquote actions are, what's going on here. And then look at it and just say, okay, I've been given this package. This is a gift. And I know that sounds corny, but that is the truth. This is a gift that you're going to be able to incorporate in a phenomenal way. And you're going to live to be an old lady. So, you know, do this now.
Can you get a sense if it's in my heart or if it's in my stomach? Am I going towards the right organ?
No, it's actually your entire body.
Ah.
So what we do, we try to isolate. And we try to say, gee, it's just this part, or it's just that part. We take care of the left thumbnail, then we're going to be fine, because then the pain I'm feeling in my brain will be great. Well, that's true maybe in a very minor level, but it's your whole body. So mm-hmm. what you're doing mm-hmm. is learning how to create a symphony out of what is an experience that you might call hard rock. And that may sound like a silly example, but think of hard rock and how aggravatingly unpleasant it is to listen to. It's very discordant. The symphony of classics has a harmonic to it. And that's what you're doing. You're taking out the hard rock, creating a symphony. You will have to learn about your entire body.
Awesome.
I hope that helps you, dear.
It does. I'm on the right track.
So go for it. Don't worry about it. You're doing beautifully.
Okay.
Take your time, honey. Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks for calling in. This is Donna Siebel.
Hey,
the phone lines are open at 888-627-6008. Goodbye, Michelle. And, hey, you can call in, too. I've got some fun things to chat about. So when we come back, we're going to talk about hunger and how. Okay, that phone line is beeping. There we go. It's gone now. A little bit of special effect. Okay, 888-627-6008. We're coming back in a minute, and we're going to be talking about hunger. How do people deal with it in different parts of the world? We'll find out. Be right back.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Welcome back. Telephone line, if you want to give me a buzz, is 888-627-6008. Hunger. Here we are in a month where we're grateful. We should be, anyway, for all of the abundance that we have in this wonderful country that we live in. There are many people around the world that don't have the abundance we've got. The United Nations says the aspect of hunger is felt by billions of people around the world. Actually, there is a suggestion they have. I don't know that it would work at my table, but I do know that this is a reality in cultures around the world. And the United Nations suggests entomophagy, eating beetles, wasps, and worms as a partial solution. Half the grasshopper stuffing. Are you, if you're at this moment going, oh, Donna, please, I don't think I can handle this. Join the club. I know exactly how you feel. However, when you study history and you go into different parts of the world, you find that eating insects has been very much a part of culture for a long time. The Aborigines of Australia, they've been doing it for centuries upon centuries because they didn't have 7-Elevens or food farms that grew food. They just didn't have that available to them, so they worked within their own natural environment. Now, over 2 billion people around the globe rely on bugs for protein. Did you know that one serving of caterpillars has more protein than a serving of beef? Who thought? Well, for me, I'd rather see those creepy crawlers, you know, eating mulberry leaves and turning those aspects of those mulberry leaves into silk, or turning into a butterfly. Thank you very much. I don't want to put them on my dinner plate. However, people have had to eat them to survive. And in 1972, there was a tremendous plane crash. Of course, where the plane crash occurred, people had to cannibalize to survive. Those that had been killed, this is what they did. They were up in the Andes. Again, they did what they had to do for food. Now, when you go without food for a long time, and we see this with anorexics, there is a lot of change that occurs in the body. The body starts to feed on its own proteins, and your stomach will literally eat itself. That's true. So, getting fed, having food is very, very important. And when you don't have enough food, because the brain needs glucose, that's why so frequently for so long it's been said if you're diabetic, have something that you can pop into your mouth like a piece of sugar or something of that nature that you can, like a, my sister-in-law, she did it. She would carry, because she had low blood sugar, she would always carry a roll of Lifesavers or something in her purse, because if she could feel the change in her body, if she'd gone for a long time without food, she'd pop one in, and then her sugar levels would go back up very quickly. The brain lives off of glucose. So this is something that is so important. Now, often you are going to have this aspect of nutrition. There are so many people around the world, as I said, that crave food. They need food. We know about this in the Philippines right now. You've got hundreds of thousands of people that are starving. And they're being sent aid from around the world. The United States has sent their carrier, I believe it's the USS Washington, and they had, I don't know how many helicopters on that, and now they're dispersing food. Anybody that says to me that the Americans don't care, they're out of their minds. I mean, we have sent billions upon billions upon billions of pounds, tons, not pounds, tons of food throughout the world to people. And we're still doing it today. Now, something regarding food and the eating of worms because of their high protein content, it is something that can be cultivated. A lot of people do. I knew of someone that had a next-door neighbor who was from Asia, and this may gross you out a little bit, but she was the neighbor was raising cockroaches in her kitchen. She wasn't letting them out and running around, although that is my biggest concern. But she said in her culture, this is how they would eat. They would raise the bugs, and then they would, you know, deep fry them or something like that. And you'll find it in many markets, open markets, in many different cultures throughout the world. But this is something that we need to know, and we need to understand that there are many different solutions to food, food production. And I think it's marvelous when we can be aware of the fact that what allows people to become productive when they don't have to function at a survival level of how are they going to grow their food, what kind of food are they going to have, they then can be productive in a way that allows them to learn, to expand for opportunities and potentialities, come up with ideas. Children that go without food are not very good in school. They can't function. Their brains won't work. We know that for a fact. So when you're looking at your life today and you're looking at the blessings you have, keep in mind the various food banks that might be in your area. Maybe go to the store. Find a place that has bulk food. Talk to the people at the food bank. Find out what the needs are. And maybe you and some neighbors could put your pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters together. Maybe buy 25 pounds of beans or 50-pound bags of beans from places that sell in bulk, like to restaurants. And you can help take it to the food bank and say, divvy this up into packages the way that you'd like. How can we get this to people? It makes a difference. There's a lot of people today that are suffering, that are out of work. Not that they don't want to work. They do. But maybe they have to be retrained to enter into a new job market that they've never, ever had to consider before. We're in a time of change. And one of the gifts that we can give during this time of the year, actually any time during the year, is an understanding that if we just take a moment to look at what our community needs, don't worry about the world, just take care of the community, you make a difference. I'm so glad you were able to join me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. Thank you so much for joining me at the broadcast table. Wow, we've got a great lineup of people coming up. I'll tell you more about it the next time we meet. Donna Siebel here. God bless. Have a fabulous day or evening wherever you are on this glorious planet of ours. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.